We receive a lot of questions about vegetarian this or vegan that. Well, we're not the experts in this area, so we found someone who is. That's right, we're talking to a vegan. And much, much more here in episode number 99 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello and welcome to the show. Well, you know, Russ, I just want to start off with a quick announcement. We're getting very, very close to show 100, this being show 99 and all. And just like last summer, we're going to have another Fat to Fit Radio social event where you can meet myself and Russ in a casual setting at a restaurant. And we'll be celebrating our 100 episodes of Fat to Fit Radio, and it's also going to be our book launch party. Now, our book is currently going through page layout and design and is set to be published right near the start of July. We just want to give everyone a heads up. So the event will be on Saturday, July 31st, somewhere in the Los Angeles area. It's going to be about 3 weeks after show 100 actually comes out, but if you're going to be in the Los Angeles area, you can pencil us in right now. And we'll have a lot more details on the event in the next few weeks.
Yeah, we'll make a post and we'll have a little blurb out on the podcast when we do actually have more information on that. And we'll also have an Evite or probably a Facebook event that we'll send out to everyone on Facebook and or in the feed. So look for that coming out very soon.
But Russ, are our listeners going to see a much smaller version of you? How much smaller are you this week?
Marginally smaller, Jeff, marginally, but a little bit. Yeah, I'm down 1.9 pounds, down to 211 pounds. I don't think I've ever seen that number in, well, forever. So, doing great. Let's go over my goals here. Eating goals, probably a 9 out of 10. Exercise, also a 9 out of 10. And motivation for the week, make it a hat trick, 9 out of 10. So, doing very well. And actually, went ahead and joined back up for the summer at the YMCA. And getting spoiled by the really nice equipment they have there.
Well, that is truly great to hear that you're right back on track and even getting a little more serious for the summer at least.
Right. No, it's real nice. And the equipment is, I don't have to wrench the little knob to make the resistance go up on the ellipticals there. It just goes up by itself, or you can just push a little button and it happens. So, you know, I may just actually keep this membership through the end of the year or going on in the future, because these things are making my home machine look really dumpy right about now.
Let's move on to our email and comment section. And we're going to start with an email from Jeremy.
Yep, he wrote here, "Hello, I'm newer to your podcast, but what I've learned in the past few months from you guys has been invaluable. Thank you for the hard work. I'm 26 years old and I've lost 40 pounds in the last 6 months. I completed a round of P90X and now I weigh 200 pounds with a body fat percentage around 26. Now I want to kick it up full force and get rid of the belly. I want to look like that guy. What I don't want to do is be inefficient in my fat loss muscle gain. I know that muscle training during a time of weight loss is really just to maintain the muscle you already have. My plan was to work out 5 days a week, twice a day at the gym. I was going to weight train the mornings and do cardio at night. My question is, am I wasting my time in the long run? Should I be trying to pack on some serious muscle before I try to get my body fat percentage down? Or should I be concentrating just on cardio and diet now that I've already got a bit of muscle? Pretend I want to be a bodybuilder. What's the next step?"
Now, normally, we are simply promoting that people change their lifestyle to that of a thinner, healthier person that they want to become, not necessarily to become a dedicated bodybuilder overnight. But your question raises some interesting points about resistance training and muscle growth that we've never covered here on the show. So your basic question is whether you should concentrate on gaining muscle first and then lose body fat, because it's very hard to gain muscle and lose fat at the very same time. Now, I do have a definite answer for you, but first I'm going to give you some background. Now, with muscular training, the first 3 to 6 months is actually nerve training. You see, at the start, your body will adapt so that the nerves will be able to get more muscle fibers to contract at the same time. If you think of a muscle, it seems like it's one solid body, but it's actually made up of little individual stringy fibers. Now, these muscle fibers are either 100% contracting or they're pretty much 100% at rest. When you lift something heavy, more of those muscle fibers contract at the same time. So for example, when you do a bicep curl and only lift 5 pounds, you're only using a small percentage of your bicep muscle fibers. those specific muscle fibers are contracting fully, you know, 100%, but most of the muscle is still at rest. The more nerve impulses, the more muscle fibers will start contracting. And here's a little secret about superhuman strength. You know, when someone gets pinned under a car and a person is able to lift up the car to get, you know, the person out from under the car? You can't make a muscle stronger than 100% of its true strength. It isn't like Star Trek where you can push the engine to 120%. 100% is 100%. What you can do is get the nerves in your body to truly recruit and use 100% of your muscle fibers to lift that car. That is truly how strong that person really is, but it is only in extreme circumstances that your body will let you use every single last muscle fiber at the very same time. Now, having said that bit of background, this is what happens when you first start resistance training. Your body is very economical and it doesn't want to build a lot of tissue or muscle if it believes it's only for a short term. The very first adaptation will be to the nerves of your body so that it can use more muscle fibers at the same time. Then it will start to truly build muscle tissue after that. When your body is convinced that your training routine isn't just for the short term, then it will truly start growing muscle. So the basic answer to your question is that it is better to be training with weights the entire time that you're losing fat. It keeps you from losing muscle mass at the same time, which is extremely important, but you're also training your nerve fibers at the same time. So as you get closer to your goal weight and you begin eating more calories, you'll be more ready to grow more muscle. So when you think about it, technically it is more efficient to be losing fat and training your nerves first. Now, one last point, it is possible that you can achieve a huge improvement in strength in the first 6 months, but put on very little actual muscle mass, because your body can now use more of those muscle fibers that you already have.
Well, that's very interesting, Jeff. I had not heard about the nerve training and that all those nerves actually now becoming, you know, active and moving more muscle. So it must be a large part mental when you're starting to weightlift.
That's right. There is a thing with weightlifting. A lot of people, when they start resistance training, all of a sudden they can lift 10 or 15 pounds heavier than they could the day before, because once they can do it once, they now know that their body is capable of doing that. And mental belief about, you know, physical exertion with your muscles is a huge component. There's a lot of weightlifters who and powerlifters who have broken records simply because their coaches have told them that they're about to attempt a weight that they know they can do. And then they have this belief that they can do it and they break the record. And just to go on, even the 4-minute mile, nobody could run a 4-minute mile. And then once the first person did it, everyone was breaking that record, you know, the week after, the month after, and years after, everyone can now do it. Once you have a belief about something, once you break that belief, your body somehow can keep doing it. And about recruiting all of those muscle fibers, once you know that you can do it, you always can do it.
Well, that is very interesting, Jeff. Thanks for that answer. And thank you, Jeremy, for sending in that question. If you'd like to get your comment or question to us, there are a few ways you can do that. The first one is by leaving a comment on the website at fattofitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is to leave a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button over on the website, fattofitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, Jeff, let's get into the web report with our news items. What do you have for us this week?
The article that I have this week is entitled, What If You Ate Only What Was Advertised on TV? And this comes from time.com, and I'll just read a couple paragraphs from it because it's a great summary. To figure out exactly how unhealthy a TV-guided diet would be, researchers studied food commercials that appeared during 84 hours of primetime programming and 12 hours of Saturday morning cartoons broadcast over the major U.S. networks during 1 month in 2004. When the research team calculated the nutritional content of a 2,000-calorie-a-day diet containing only foods that were advertised on television, they found that it exceeded the government's recommended daily amount of fat by 20 times and had 25 times the recommended daily intake of sugar. That's almost a month's worth of sugar in 1 day. In addition, the TV-marketed diet provided less than half the recommended daily servings of fruit, vegetables, and dairy. In fact, the sources of nutrition in the TV ad diet were almost the exact opposite of what the government's food pyramid recommends. Instead of making up the smallest proportion of the day's calories, as nutritionists advise, fats and sugars accounted for the largest portion of calories in a diet based on television advertising. Couple this nutritional inversion with the fact that the marketing campaigns are notoriously effective in influencing people's behavior, and the result is what many nutrition experts call a toxic environment, one that dissuades Americans from making healthy food choices and encourages inactivity. In the year that the study took place, the authors point out that food makers spent $11.3 billion hawking their products, while the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which oversees national nutritional recommendations, spent only $268 million, 2% of the total that was funneled into food marketing on nutritional education. So this really isn't that surprising. If you eat what you see on TV, you're just eating garbage and processed foods.
Yeah, Jeff, it seems almost criminal that these products, they are the cheapest products to make, but they're going to make the most money from them. At the same time, they're just robbing the world's health with these products. It seems criminal.
Well, it's true. They said in the article that it's a toxic environment for health. And we've heard people refer to this as an obesogenic environment as well, where if you eat what is advertised and what you see other people eating and what you see around you, you are going to be obese.
Well, I just want to put in a plug for the TiVo. I've not watched a commercial in probably 8 years. Unless I was watching live TV, which I try not to do at all. If I'm going to watch a show, I watch it pre-recorded, and I'm going to fast forward through any of those marketing campaigns. So I'm kind of ignorant on what actually all those products are. So actually, I'm probably doing myself a good service by not watching those commercials.
Well, it might cut you back a bit, but now they have all the product placements in the television that you're watching between the ads, though. People are drinking Coca-Cola, and they're eating French fries and things like that. You know, they're just going to get smarter eventually.
You know, the $11.3 billion, yeah, they're going to get in there somehow, aren't they?
That's for sure. But what do you have for us this week, Russ?
Well, you know, that's not really a news item. This is a blog post over at joshsgarage.typepad.com. And this is a guy named Josh Hillis, and he's got a fat loss and fitness blog. And the title of the article is, Are You Wasting Your Time in the Gym? And you can take a look at the show notes and read the whole article. I'm not going to do that right now, but basically, he's talking about a workout log, a workout folder, journal. And we talk about a lot, you know, start a food journal, use things like Daily Burn, MyFitnessPal, Lose It app on the iPhone. These are all great tools for getting your food intake down and knowing what you're putting in your body. And then we talk about a lot about, you know, let's, you know, work out. But myself, I have not done this, and I don't know why. I'll go work out. I'll do the 30 minutes of cardio or 40 minutes, whatever it is. And I'm going to lift some weights, and I might do a workout from the internet or from a book or just one I've done myself. But I don't log like how many reps I do, what the weight I do is. I do it just by feel and how I'm feeling that day. And so I'm wondering why I don't. And I think that that's why I haven't seen maybe a real marked improvement. I mean, I've improved and I've gotten stronger and I've noticed more definition, but I haven't pushed myself. I haven't logged these things and tried to beat my own record and really created this environment where I'm in competition with myself. I think that's a huge part of it. So I'm going to be having a workout journal now. I've got one here now. And as I do my workouts now, I'm going to be pushing myself to better lift more weights, more reps, and really start to make the workout portion of my weight loss just so much more efficient.
Well, it does make a big difference. I have workout and food journals that go back about 10 years, and I'm not 100% always consistent, but I'll go back and I'll look at something I did 5 or 6 years ago for, let's just say, bench press, for example, and I'll see what I did. And I'm thinking, if I can't lift more weight than what I was doing 5 years ago, there's just something wrong with my workout schedule and my routines. And I have noticed that I'm stronger in every exercise. And it's not that I'm trying any harder. It's just that I'm keeping the same sort of intensity.
Yeah, so I'm going to recommend everybody out there, go get yourself some kind of notebook. I don't know of anyone online. You know, you can kind of log your workout with any of these fitness products, these workout journals online. But you know what? They're not as, I don't know, they're just not easy. You know, you can't just sit out there and write it down on a little piece of paper or in a little book, which is what I have now, which I think is going to make it a lot easier. I don't have to remember what I did and then come back in and go on the computer and do that. I think a physical journal is going to be the thing that makes a big difference. So I suggest everybody out there, get yourself a fitness journal. Now we're going to move on to our feature section here, and today we're talking about vegetarian and vegan lifestyles. Now, over on our Facebook page, we asked you who you wanted to hear from the subject, except for us. So on Skype right now, we have Megan Storms. She's the host of the Run Vegan Run podcast over at veganrunningmom.com and the new podcast, Country Vegan, City Vegan.
So Megan, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, first of all, why don't you tell us about your lifestyle choices and how you moved into vegetarianism and then ultimately veganism? I'm just wondering, did you always start into vegetarianism? Was it a weight-related thing? How did you really get into this?
I would say, first and foremost, it was weight-related because I had, you know, always been a heavy person and battled with my weight all through my childhood and teen years. And then after our son was born, decided I was done and I needed to, you know, be a fit mother and be able to keep up with our children. And so I was doing a lot of calorie counting and I was like, wow, you know, I'm noticing something here that all the animal products are, there's so many more calories and so much more fat and cholesterol. And so it was sort of this natural pulling away from those foods. Then I would say it also was a health aspect of, you know, doing some research and reading and being like, you know what, this is actually a lot healthier for me as well. Yeah, I would say initially it was a weight loss thing. Actually, our family moved into veganism because of our daughter, who at the time was 7. And she, you know, did the age-old question a lot of kids will do at the dinner table. You know, where's this piece of chicken from?
Oh, yeah.
And then the whole, I don't want to eat the chicken. I kind of like chickens, mommy and daddy. So as a family, we went into it saying, okay, we're going to support her and we're going to try this. And just really educated ourselves on how to raise children being vegan and making sure that they're getting everything that they need. And we all feel amazing. And so we've never looked back.
So just for our background for our listeners, can you tell us kind of the different types of vegetarians you might be? I know there's, you mentioned vegan. Mm-hmm. There's also like a pescatarian. What are the different types and what makes them different?
Okay, so vegan, which is what I am, means that I consume no animal products whatsoever. So no eggs, no dairy, no fish. I get that a lot. So you eat fish. If you are a vegetarian but you eat fish, then you're a pescatarian. A vegetarian, plain, just vegetarian, means that you do not consume flesh of animals, but you will consume dairy and eggs. And then there's lacto, and some people will say lacto-ovo, meaning they do eat both. And then there will be ovo-vegetarians, where they only eat eggs but no dairy. And then there will be lacto-vegetarians, and they only eat dairy but no egg.
So I think for most people, they would probably do it sort of like here. You start limiting some of the choices of, you know, animal products and then get more strict as you go. What are some things that you started eliminating right at the start when you're gradually becoming more of a vegetarian?
For us, the first and foremost easiest thing was red meat. You know, right off the bat, no more red meat. And so we were doing, you know, poultry. We were still doing fish. And then it was like, okay, no more poultry, no more pork. So yeah, I definitely, when people come to me and say, how can I do this? I say, you do not go to cold turkey. You take one thing at a time and you slowly adapt because it's hard. You know, we get very used to what is on our plate and then to suddenly remove, you know, that piece of meat and our dairy is overwhelming. So one thing at a time for sure.
Now, you mentioned the health benefits of being a vegetarian. So what are the big things that makes vegetarian really healthy?
I mean, there's so many things, but the things that come, you know, to my mind instantly is that there's no cholesterol in plant-based foods. So if you're not consuming cholesterol, you don't have cholesterol issues most of the time. Now, there are the rare cases, you know, people who have a genetic high cholesterol, and that has nothing to do with the foods that they're consuming. But in general, you know, if you're vegan or vegetarian, vegetarians do, consume some cholesterol if they're eating eggs and cheese. If you're eating plant-based foods, you're getting such an amazing amount of, you know, just natural vitamins and minerals and micro and macronutrients. And so your body is very, very, you know, in balance. You just feel better. Your energy level is great. one thing that I noticed upon cutting out dairy is that all my life I'd had kind of a little bit of phlegm, a little bit of a post-nasal drip, and I don't have that anymore. And a lot of people notice that, and it's because our bodies actually produce more phlegm, more mucus when we're consuming dairy, as well as in our GI tract, just feeling more bloated and, you know, kind of that gassy feeling that we'll get. Because a lot of people tend to be lactose intolerant on a mild level. So there's all these ways that you feel really good. And then our bodies, because, like when I go to the doctor and I get my blood work done, they're just amazed because my cholesterol is so low. And my iron, believe it or not, is actually excellent because I eat plenty of grains, which are loaded with iron. So there's so many health benefits.
Now, of course, those health benefits we're referring to if you're eating healthy non-meat, non-egg foods, right? I know people who say they're vegetarian and eat a lot of chocolate and potatoes and just garbage, but, you know, French fries, because they say, you know, I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah.
What do you think about those people? How would you become the most healthy that you could be without eating any meat?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really good point because that's sort of the I hear that a lot. You know, people say, oh, I was a vegetarian or I was a vegan in college and I was living off of French fries, pickles, and veggie burgers. Well, that's no better than
yes, yeah.
You know, a lot of things that we do, you know, in college or whatever. So you definitely have to be willing to eat whole foods. And that doesn't mean that it has to be lavish. It can be just as simple as rice and some beans. It can be very, very easy. It can be very, very complicated, but the point is that you want to be eating, you know, whole foods, whole grains, vegetables, fruits, things without a label. You know, I tell people that a lot. The more that's just natural coming into your kitchen, so much better for you. And, you know, nuts and seeds for your proteins, tofu and tempeh for your proteins. So, yeah, I mean, you definitely can be an unhealthy vegetarian or vegan. Just because you slap that label on your lifestyle or your diet does not instantly mean it's healthful.
So you mentioned your young daughter. Now, are there any considerations for children being vegetarian or vegan? Are they missing something as they grow?
They are not. As long as you make sure that they're eating a variety of foods. You know, obviously with children, the first thing that I think most people would think of is calcium. So you want to make sure that they're eating things that are high in calcium. Broccoli is extremely high in calcium. My children love it. So we're, you know, great there. They eat it every day. Leafy greens like kale, those, you know, they're also high in calcium. So you want to make sure that your children are getting enough calcium. The big debate that comes up with most people when they hear vegan, they think of the vitamin B12 because it's not available through plant-based foods. So you, with children especially, want to supplement that. And my kids, it's a spray that they take in their mouth and it's no big deal. And so they take that. And other than that, there really isn't. I would say, you know, you just want to make sure that they're eating a variety of foods and that they're not doing, you know, the veggie burger and French fry diet. Because obviously they're going to miss a wide variety of vitamins if they're only eating a few things.
All right, let's move into the daily life of a vegetarian or a vegan. So when you go shopping, what do you fill up your cart with?
I would say about 80% of it is vegetables and fruit, whole grains, you know, different types of rice. We eat a lot of quinoa because quinoa is, you guys talked about quinoa on a show, am I correct?
Yeah, that was our kind of our food of highlighted on last show, actually.
Okay. Yeah. So quinoa, because it's, and I'm sure you maybe talked about this, it's just because it's a whole, you know, has all the amino acids. So it's such a great source of protein. So we'll do that. Tofu and tempeh, breads, nuts and seeds, dried fruit. I think that's about it. I mean, occasionally, you know, we will do veggie burgers, but I really reserve, I feel those are a novelty food, and I reserve those more for like, oh gosh, it's 8 o'clock at night. We just got in from soccer practice and we don't have anything to eat. Microwave veggie burger, you know, it's our quick fix. So, but most of my cart is fruits and vegetables, I would say.
Now you mentioned one called, I had never heard it before there, tempeh. What is that?
tempeh is a soy food. It's a more of a whole food than tofu in that it's the soybeans, not, you know, tofu is like the curdled remains of boiled down soybeans. Tempeh is fermented soybeans, kind of made usually with another grain and formed into a cake. Like it's a chewier texture and nuttier in flavor, and it's higher in protein than tofu. And it's got a more unique taste. It's definitely, you know, tofu, people are like, oh, you can do anything with tofu, and it tastes like whatever you're cooking it with. Tempeh takes a little bit more practice. There's a little bit of a learning curve, but once you get it down, it's really good stuff. And you can find that at a Whole Foods or Trader Joe's has it now as well.
So you must find that you can eat as much as you want and not really worry about the calories because it's so not calorically dense like meat and eggs, etc. Are you finding that?
With the exception of the fruits and veggies, yes. Like my daily lunch, I do a huge salad at lunch every day. And I literally, when I say this, I eat it in a mixing bowl, literally. And it's like 350 calories. Hmm. And people look at it and they go, whoa. That's a salad. But then, of course, like nuts and seeds, those are high in calories, right? So I still am very meticulous with I measure those things out because it's so easy to just keep putting them in, you know, and suddenly you've eaten 500 calories of walnuts. But yes, in general, you can eat a lot. But the other thing is all the plant foods and stuff, because there's so much water and there's so much bulk to them, you get full pretty fast. But then you get hungry, I would say, maybe quicker because it digests easier than meat and dairy.
So do you eat more often than the average person, do you think?
I probably do. And, I don't know, though, is that a product of being vegan or is that a product of being an endurance athlete because I run so much? So I'm not really, I would probably say it's 50-50. I know some people who are vegan and maybe don't eat as often as I do.
But also being hungry is a sign of a fast metabolism, so that's also good.
Exactly, yes. I would say I eat on average, you know, I do the breakfast. I actually divide my breakfast up into two parts because I eat a little breakfast before I run, then I run, then I have post-run breakfast, then I'll have a snack, then I'll have lunch, and then I'll have a snack, and then I might have another snack, and then I have dinner, and then I have a snack. What's that, like 5 or 6 times a day?
And that's actually what we suggest people to do throughout the day to speed up their metabolism, is to eat smaller meals more often.
Yeah, and you don't get as hungry and crazy and then binge.
So I have to ask, what foods do you miss that are not vegetarian? I mean, do you miss any, or is it now it's been so long that you've completely lost your taste for any kind of meat products?
Yeah, you know, I don't miss meat or cheese or egg at all. I would say the only thing, it's not that I miss it, but sometimes it's a bummer, I would say, that, like, I love cake and cookies. Now, vegan cookies and cake and sweets can be excellent, and I bake some mean cupcakes. But, you know, it's not as available. So if I'm at a birthday gathering, unless I bring our own vegan cupcakes, I have to pass on the cake. Then I will be like, oh, that looks good. That's kind of a bummer, but I don't want it. I don't know if that makes sense. But as for meat, no. When I smell meat cooking, like barbecuing and stuff, I don't ever find myself thinking, oh, that smells good.
Well, you were just mentioning about birthday parties. Do you find it hard to eat in regular restaurants? Do you have to special order or really be careful of where you're going?
As long as it's not just like a steakhouse, I mean, obviously that's going to be really difficult. I find that usually waiters and waitresses are very accommodating. If you're just polite up front, hey, we're vegan, you know, what would you recommend? Most restaurants know what that means when you tell them. Or if they don't, they say, oh, are you vegetarian? Say, oh, no, I'm vegan. That means, you know, and you explain it. We also are really good at going, you knowing the areas we can go. Like if you go to Italian, you can almost always get a pasta dish with just marinara sauce, completely safe. You know, Asian cuisine is a great avenue as well. And, but if we get invited, if it's somebody's birthday or somebody's, you know, whatever, and we get invited and it's to a steakhouse, a lot of times we will just make sure that we eat a big snack before we go so that if we get there and all that's available for us is iceberg lettuce and tomatoes, we won't starve.
Now, we probably get most of our questions about vegetarian, about being a vegetarian or being vegan, particularly about protein. Like, how do I get enough protein in my diet? Do you find that it's hard to get enough protein? And how do you, you mentioned tempeh and quinoa, soy. I mean, are those your main sources of protein, or are there other ones that are a good source?
Good question. That's a very popular question. So I would say for the average person, it's really easy to meet your protein needs on a vegan diet or vegetarian diet. You know, of course, there's beans and nuts and seeds, quinoa, tofu, tempeh, the things we mentioned that have protein that you kind of think of as a meat substitute, if you will. But then we also forget things like broccoli and kale and asparagus, like all these things, they have protein. So over the course of a day or even the course of a week, cumulatively, it adds up and you get more than enough protein. Now, somebody who needs more protein like myself, because of maybe lifestyle, there are great ways to get it. I have a smoothie every morning after I exercise, and I do a combination of hemp protein, pea protein, and rice protein. And I do a combination of those three because when you do that, then you get the entire amino acid profile. And in that smoothie, I get, depending on what else I put in there, 20 to 25 grams of protein. So it's just a big boost of protein right after I work out. And between that and everything else that I eat, I'm fine. And I think that, you know, the average American consumes too much protein.
You mentioned being an athlete. Now, sometimes people think of vegetarians of being, you know, very frail and weak because, you know, they're starving because they're only eating plants. Now, that's not the case with you. You are a endurance athlete. And so is that just a complete fallacy that vegetarians are just going to be have a weak body?
Definitely. I'm a marathon runner. So I can run 26.2 miles. I train pretty vigorously during the week. I'm currently, you know, at like 60 miles a week that I run, and I cycle twice a week for give or take 40-ish miles total. So I'm definitely not weak and frail. There's lots of athletes out there that are vegan and vegetarian. There's actually some in the NFL that I know of. I cannot think of the names. There's an ultra runner, an amazing ultra runner. He runs hundreds, you know, of miles at a time. Scott Jurek is his name. He's vegan. So it's definitely, you know, people, I think they're thinking that, but we're moving more away from that and realizing, you know what, this is actually a great way to be an athlete, to consuming this clean burning fuel, and your body thrives on it. And since going vegan, my running actually has improved.
You mentioned earlier that people who are thinking of becoming a vegetarian should start slowly and only stop eating one certain type of food every week or every month and gradually go into that. Do you have any other suggestions of websites or cookbooks or other good sources of information people could look into?
Definitely. When you're first starting out and you're really wondering, how the heck am I going to do this? A great website, and I actually know the author of the cookbooks that are highlighted on this website, is www.compassionatecooks.com. It's Colleen Patrick Goudreau's website. Her cookbooks, they're just easy. So it's a great way for people to start. Website is loaded with ideas on how to start out, and lots of articles. She also has a podcast. So I would say that's a great website. In addition to that, there are great books out there. Skinny Bitch, I don't know if you guys have heard about that book. And then there's the sequel, or the, I don't know, it's not really a sequel, it's for men. It's called Skinny Bastard. And the books themselves, like when you look at it, you think this can't be serious. And it's written in a kind of humorous, sarcastic tone. The information behind it is solid. And it has some really great ways for a beginner. And they have a cookbook as well that partners up with those books. And it's really simple ways to kind of get started in the kitchen and just eliminating one thing at a time. So I would say those are the ones, because there's a lot of really good vegan and vegetarian websites out there. But if you just go to those and you're still eating all this stuff and you look at it, it's a little daunting. So I would say start with those. And definitely, you know, go slowly. People are creatures of habit, and it's hard to break those habits.
So Megan, are there any last things you want to tell our listeners about being a vegetarian or vegan? You know, is there a pep talk or some great suggestion that that all of them should have?
You know, the thing that I always tell people is that even if you don't feel like it's something you think you can do, becoming vegan or even vegetarian, eating more plant-based foods is for everybody. It's going to definitely help you with weight loss, maintaining fitness, and, you know, just being a healthier person. But I'd also say if more people would give it a try, a real good try, and not just live off of veggie burgers and French fries, that they would be amazed at how good they feel. And when I say how good they feel, I don't just mean physically, but there's just like this amazing feeling inside when you're realizing like all the great things you're doing for your body and for the earth and the planet and the environment. You know, being vegan definitely has an impact on you as a person, but it also has an impact on the environment and the world and animals. And that's very rewarding. So you've got the rewarding bit of how you feel and look, but also the impact that you're, I guess, not making. So I would say, give it a try. Don't think of it as a diet of deprivation, because I definitely don't feel deprived. I feel like there's a world of food out there that when I was omnivorous, I shunned. And now my plate is full and everything tastes amazing.
So Jeff, are you going to be cutting out all meat out of your diet now?
Well, no, I'm a dedicated, I guess, non-vegetarian. But the thing is, I do agree with cutting out the processed foods, eating more healthy foods. The foods that don't have ingredients on the side, those are the most healthy. I'm not sure if I could go 100% vegan or vegetarian, but I agree in trying to go towards that way. But I guess I'm pretty ingrained into what I eat. I don't eat a lot of red meat, but a lot of chicken, that's for sure. How about you, Russ?
Well, you know, when talking to Megan, everything sounds good. You know, when we're interviewing her and it's like, wow, this really sounds great. But I don't know. I've been omnivore here for my whole life, and I don't know that I could actually get rid of all meat from my diet. But, you know, just for health-wise, you know, cutting out the red meat is probably a good idea. I don't know that I'm going to cut out chicken. Again, I've called myself chicken public enemy number one. But I think, you know, overall, just reducing the amount of meat I'm eating is probably going to be beneficial. I think also calorie-wise, meat is fairly dense in calories, particularly steak and, you know, those red meats and that are very marbled with fat. Those are much higher in calories than, say, you know, lean chicken breast. So I think overall for just a healthy diet, though, that's a good idea.
So, Russ, was there anything in the interview that you found surprising?
Well, I don't know that it was surprising, but the all the products that she eats to that are, you know, protein rich, I found that very educational, especially the tempeh. I never heard of that before. I definitely had to ask her about that. And then all the soy products and things. We knew about those. But also the vegetarian protein powders. I never heard of those. She mentioned rice and a wheat powder, I think it was. And that those are protein powders, I thought was very interesting.
It is kind of interesting because those protein-like powders, those are now processed foods, wouldn't they be?
Yes, but she also mentioned that, you know, she does run and, you know, to get that amount of protein is going to be hard. Even for myself, when I'm working out, you know, there's eating that much protein to really, you know, build muscle is sometimes hard. And just that little bit of extra, you know, help with the protein powder is going to be is a big help.
Well, the thing that I get out of the interview is that real people can do this sort of lifestyle if they are dedicated, and you can be very healthy if you spend the time and eat good foods. Not just like she was referring to eating pancakes and French fries and Kraft dinner and that kind of stuff for all that you're eating and just not eating any animal products. So I think if our listeners are interested, you know, maybe give it a shot to start cutting back some things that are the most unhealthy food and see if you're enjoying it and get more on the path towards vegetarianism. So, Russ, what do you have for us in our recipe section this week?
Well, Megan mentioned a website, CompassionateCooks.com. And so I went and took a look and found a recipe here. And, of course, it's Mexican. What am I going to do? It's called Hot Tamale Pie. And normally tamales, I would say, you know, it's a corn with a nice big chunk of meat in the middle. But this one, it's a vegetarian. It's a version of hot tamale pie, and it's got some great ingredients and kind of beans, I think, are the main ingredients that are replacing the meat in this, but it has so many great ingredients and spices that you're not going to miss the meat in this one. And we'll have a link in the show notes for it. And take a look at the other recipes over there, too, because there were quite a few that were interesting. A lot of those recipes are for sale, but they do have some free ones, and those are pretty good. So check it out here, the hot tamale pie.
Sounds good.
All right, Jeff, what kind of homework do we have for everybody today?
Well, the homework is going to go with the theme of the show, and it is to try some typical vegetarian foods that you have never tried. I'm going to leave a link in the show notes to an about.com article that lists their top 7 foods that they've selected for versatility and convenience in vegetarian cooking. And they say they also taste great. So here's the list. Tofu, seitan, egg replacer, nutritional yeast, textured vegetable protein, tempeh, and soy ice cream. This doesn't mean that you have to become vegetarian in the future, but it is always nice to expand your healthy food alternatives.
All right, good one. And what is our quote for the week?
Well, this week we have 2 quotes. I had one selected, and a listener named Ivan sent us another one that was very similar. And I really liked the message from them, so here are both of the quotes. The first one comes from Bruce Lee, and he said, "Knowing is not enough. We must apply. Willing is not enough. We must do." And the second one comes from Ernest Hemingway, and he said, "Never mistake motion for action."
All right, good quotes, Jeff. Thanks for those. And want to thank Megan Storms from the Run Vegan Run podcast for taking the time to interview about the vegetarian and vegan lifestyle. Really appreciate her coming on the show. You can find all the links over at fattofitradio.com. Look for show number 99. And again, well, all links that we mentioned in the show and wonderful homework so you can go home and do that. And with that, we will talk to you next time on show number 100. Talk to you then.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.
All right. Well, first of all, I'd like to hear about how you got into veterinary. This is going to be bad.
It's half vegetarian, half veterinarian. This is good.
That's awesome.